Is that phone number available?
As of last Friday, yes, and it's the kind of number that people will remember.
Taglieri nodded.
I like the number, so that part's definite.
And I get how the other kinds of advertising will help, but I can't say that the commercial really grabs me.
I nodded, knowing he'd feel that way.
After hearing what you said about Cal Worthington, my concept is less about having one commercial than a series of commercials. At the same time, I didn't want to go too far out on a limb. The reason personal injury attorneys use commercials like these is because they do work.
A series of commercials? Won't that be expensive?
I pulled up the slides outlining the estimated costs that I'd put together.
Up front, there will certainly be additional costs, but over the course of a year, you'll not only save money, but get a lot more in return. Not only more commercials, but more extensive advertising in a variety of ways.
He zeroed in on the line that showed how much he was spending and pointed toward it.
How did you know how much I was paying?
I'm good at my job, I said. I wasn't sure what he thought about my answer. In the silence, he fiddled with a pen on his desk.
What would be your plan, then? How would you begin?
I'd get to work on the website and internet advertising, especially search platforms, so you'll have better exposure there. Simultaneously, we'd schedule filming for the first two commercials. We'd also get the voiceover done. I'm almost certain that I can have the first one airing by October when the new website is ready. That dovetails perfectly with the timing for internet advertising and search prioritization. The second commercial will be ready for the holiday season, and I'm confident it'll be something that people remember. But you'll be the judge of that.
All right, let's see your idea.
I showed him. Afterward, he leaned back in his chair and rubbed his jaw.
I don't know what I think, he said. I've never seen anything like it.
That's the point. It forces you to remember it because it makes you think.
It doesn't have much of a sales pitch.
No, it doesn't, but it keeps your name out there. I'm thinking we should follow that up with a couple of billboards in January. Two fantastic ones are coming available around then, and I'd like to lock them up if you're in agreement. And then, of course, there are the third and fourth commercials. Like the first commercial, those will air year-round, one starting in October or November, depending on filming schedules, and the other in January, rotating after that. They're shorter, single theme, and humorous.
Let's see what you have.
I didn't put together any slides for them.
Why not?
You're not my client yet. He seemed to think about that.
How about you give me a hint?
It would focus on your experience. I had the sense that the meeting had become more important to him than he'd anticipated. Always a good sign.
I'll need a bit more than that.
All right, I said, but only for one of them. Imagine a little girl, around 8 years old, sitting at a legal desk surrounded by law books, including one that says personal injury. She's scribbling on a legal yellow pad, looking harried, and reaches over to the phone and says into the speaker,
Dolores, can you bring me another chocolate milk?
At that point, the screen fades to black, and words appear as if being typewritten onto the screen. When you've been injured on the job and need help with your medical bills, you don't want a lawyer who's new on the job. You want a lawyer with experience. You want someone who's won millions of dollars for his clients. You want Joey Taglieri. When I finished, Joey began to grin.
I like it.
I nodded without responding. I'd learned over the years that saying nothing was often the best thing I could do when it came to a client who was considering pulling the trigger. No doubt Joey knew that too, because he leaned back in his chair again.
You should know that I've checked into your background, he said.
After you talked me into this meeting, I called your old boss. I felt my chest constrict. Oh, I said.
He was vague, his bosses always are, but he said that you went out on your own a couple of months ago. You told me you had your own firm, but you didn't mention that you just started it.
I felt my mouth go dry. My firm might be new, but I've been in advertising for 13 years.
He also suggested to me that instead of talking to him, it would probably be better if I called to get recommendations or opinions from your current clients.
Oh, I said again.
Do you think I could do that? Contact some of your other clients?
Well, that's what I thought you might say.
If I were to guess, my suspicion is that you don't have any other clients as of yet. So after I spoke to your boss, I drove by your office this weekend. Turns out I recognize the place. A former client of mine owns the place. It's not exactly the kind of office that inspires confidence.
I forced myself to keep my voice steady. For the most part, I meet clients at their place of business. And if you want to talk to previous clients, I can probably get you some names. I've worked with dozens of clients in the Charlotte area.
I know that too,
he said, raising his hand. I called a few of them already. 3 of them, to be exact. They're still with Peters, and they weren't thrilled at the idea of talking to me until I told them I had no intention of telling Peters anything about it. How did you... When I trailed off, he finished the question for me. Know who to contact?
You're good at your job and I'm good at mine. But anyway, each of them said you were terrific. Very creative, very hardworking, and very good at what you do.
Why are you telling me this?
Because I want you to know that while I'm not thrilled with the idea of being your first and only client, I've been trying to convince myself that it probably means you'll have more time to work on my campaign. Frankly, I'm not sure I've gotten there yet, but after seeing what you've done, I'll admit that I'm impressed with the thought process you put into all this.
He stopped there and I took a deep breath.
What exactly are you saying?
With my head spinning after the meeting with Taglieri, I drove to Emily's house. Had it not been for the navigation system on my phone, I never would have been able to find it. Though not far from my home, I'd never detoured through that particular neighborhood, and the main access road wasn't particularly well marked. The lots were heavily wooded, and the homes were mid-century modern, with large windows, cedar plank siding, and main levels that rose and fell with the topography. After pulling up the drive, I followed a curving walkway that passed over a koi pond and led to the front door. When Emily opened the door, I was struck again by the warmth of her smile.
I didn't expect you so soon, she said. For some reason, I thought your presentation would take longer. Come on in.
If the argument with Vivian made it hard to concentrate, and the meeting with Taglieri left my head spinning, then stepping into the home of a recently divorced woman with whom I'd shared a bed made the day seem even more surreal. It felt wrong somehow, inappropriate, and I reminded myself that I'd simply come by to get my daughter. It was no different than picking her up from my mom's, but even so, the feeling that I was doing something illicit only intensified as Emily motioned toward the stairs. The kids are up in the playroom with Noodle. They finished lunch about half an hour ago, so they haven't been up there that long. I nodded, making sure to maintain distance between us.
Did they have a good time?
They've had a great time, she said. They've been laughing a lot. I think your daughter is in love with the dog.
That doesn't shock me in the slightest, I said. How did Noodle do with the hamsters?
He sniffed the cage for a few seconds, and that was about it.
Good. I put my hands in my pockets, the voice inside my head continuing to whisper that I shouldn't be here, that my presence in Emily's home was inappropriate.
Turning away from Emily, I surveyed the room. With an open floor plan and shaded sunlight streaming through large windows along the rear of the house, it was comfortable and eclectic, with odds and ends scattered throughout the room, the home of an artist. On the walls, I spotted a handful of large paintings that I assumed she'd done.
You have a beautiful home, I said, trying to keep the conversation innocuous.
Thank you, she said, sounding far more at ease than I was feeling.
I've actually been thinking about selling the place. There's too much maintenance, and a couple of the rooms are in serious need of renovation. Of course, I've been saying that ever since David moved out. I'm sorry it's such a mess.
I didn't notice, I said. Are those some of your paintings?
She moved closer to me. Not too close, but close enough that I was able to catch a whiff of the honeysuckle shampoo she used.
Some of my older work. I've been wanting to trade a few of them out for some more recent paintings, but that's been on the back burner, too.
I can understand why the gallery owner loves your work.
They remind me of when I was pregnant with Bodie. They're darker and less textured than a lot of what I do now. Moodier, too. Of course, I was sick as a dog for months when I was pregnant, so maybe that has something to do with it. Hold on a second.
She walked toward the staircase.
Bodie? London? She called out. Are you still okay?
In chorus, I heard their answer.
Yes! Your dad's here, London.
Footsteps pounded overhead, and I caught sight of my daughter peeking through the railings.
Daddy, can I stay longer? Bodie has an extra lightsaber, and it's red. And we're playing with Noodle.
I looked toward Emily.
It's fine with me, she said with a shrug. She's keeping Bodie busy and happy, which makes my life easy.
Maybe a few more minutes, I called up. But we can't stay long. Remember that you have dance tonight.
With Miss Hemshaw?
Emily asked. When I nodded, Emily went on.
I've heard some pretty interesting things about her, and by interesting I mean not particularly good.
I'm not sure London enjoys it all that much, I admitted.
So pull her out.
With Vivian, such things aren't always that easy, I thought to myself. In the silence, Emily hooked a thumb toward the kitchen.
Would you like some sweet tea while you wait? I just made a pitcher.
I heard the voice in my head again, this time telling me to politely decline, but instead I found myself saying, Sounds good. I followed her toward the breakfast table in the kitchen. The hamster cage was on the floor in front of French doors that led to the backyard. Off to the side, I saw another room, obviously her studio. There were paintings stacked along the walls and another on an easel. There was an apron draped over the battered desk, along with hundreds of containers of paint. This is where you work?
My studio, she said, pulling out the pitcher of tea. It used to be a screened porch, but we glassed it in when we bought the house. It's got perfect light in the morning.
Is it hard to work at home?
Not really, but I've always painted at home, so I don't know any different.
How does that work with Bodhi? She poured the tea into the glasses, added ice to both, and brought them to the table.
I work in the mornings before we really get going for the day, but even after that it's not too bad. If I get the urge to paint, he'll head upstairs and play or watch TV. He's gotten used to it.
She took a seat and I followed her lead, still feeling far too self-conscious. If Emily felt the same, she didn't show it.
How did it go with Taglieri?
It went well, I said. He hired me. For the entire campaign, I proposed.
That's great, she cried. Congratulations, I knew you'd nail it. You've got to be thrilled.
I don't think I've had time to really process it yet.
It'll sink in soon enough, I'm sure. Are you going to celebrate tonight?
I remembered Vivian's behavior that morning.
We'll see. He's your first client. You have to celebrate. But before that, I want to hear how it went. Walk me through it.
Recapping the events distracted me from my discomfort, and when I recounted how Taglieri had called Peters and the things he'd said, she put her hands to her mouth, her eyes wide.
Oh, that's terrible. Did you just shrivel up?
It wasn't pleasant, that's for sure.
I think I would have died.
That's pretty much exactly how I felt. I think he just wanted to see me squirm.
Lawyers will do that, she agreed. But still, that's great. I couldn't be any happier for you.
I appreciate that. It feels like I got the monkey off my back, you know?
I know exactly how you feel. I can remember the first time I found out that one of my paintings had sold in the gallery. At the time, I was certain I'd never be able to make a living with my art, and I kept expecting the owner to call me and tell me that a mistake had been made. And when he finally did call with good news, I was so afraid to hear what he might say that I let my voicemail pick it up.
When I laughed, she went on.
So what's next? How does it work in your world?
I'll get a contract to him tomorrow, and as soon as he signs it, I'll get to work. There's scouting, scheduling, getting permits, and working with my tech guy on the website. Camera and sound crews to call, agencies, rehearsals. Filming is always a major production.
Can you do all that while you're watching London?
I hadn't even begun to think about it, but replied, I'm going to have to, but we're trying to find the right daycare.
I know. London told me at lunch. She doesn't want to go. She said that it was pointless and she was starting school soon anyway.
Pointless? That sounded more like Vivian's word than my daughter's. She said that?
It amazed me too, but then again she seems a lot more mature than Bodhi.
I took a long pull from the glass, wondering what else Vivian had said to London about daycare. Other than that, London was okay?
She was perfect. Your daughter is very sweet. She loves Noodle, by the way. She wants to bring her home.
I told her that I'd have to ask you. We're good with hamsters. I held up a hand. I couldn't handle a dog in addition to everything else going on. I'm thinking of giving up sleep for a while. She smiled, looking almost wistful.
London mentioned that you taught her to ride a bike.
I did.
I keep wanting to do that for Bodhi, but I'm afraid I won't be able to keep him from falling over. I think I'll need to hit the gym first and develop some upper body strength. In all my spare time, I mean.
Kids are definitely time-consuming.
I know, she said, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
She was exactly right, I thought, finishing my glass. Thanks for this. I hate to take any more of your time and we really should go.
I'm glad London came over. I got to know Bodhi's best friend a little better.
I rose from the table, grabbed the hamster cage, and followed Emily to the door. When I called for London, she and Bodhi trotted down the steps, followed by a small poodle.
Noodle the poodle? I asked.
Bodhi named him, she said.
I'm ready, London announced.
Noodle is so cute, isn't he, Daddy? Can we go to the pet store? I want to see if they have a dog like Noodle.
Not today, I said. Unfortunately, Daddy's got some work to do.
Say goodbye to Miss Emily, okay?
She gave Emily a hug. My daughter would voluntarily hug anyone. I'd seen her hug the mailman and old women at the park. She also hugged Bodhi, and as we made our way to the car, I felt her slip her hand into mine.
Miss Emily's really nice. She let me have marshmallow fluff on my peanut butter sandwich.
That sounds tasty, and I'm glad you had fun.
I did. Can Bodhi come over to my house next time?
I wondered how Vivian would feel about that.
Please?
We'll have to make sure it's okay with his mom, okay?
Okay. And you know what?
What?
Thanks for bringing me over. I love you, Daddy.
Vivian's edginess was still evident when she got home from work, at least when it came to me, but by then I can't say it caught me off guard. It wasn't until later that evening, as I sat beside her on the couch, that I finally saw the flicker of a smile. It vanished as quickly as it had come, but I'd known her long enough to understand that the cold shoulder was probably more like the produce drawer in the fridge as opposed to the freezer.
I've got good news, I said.
Yeah? I got my first client today. I'll be dropping off the contract tomorrow.
With that lawyer you were telling me about?
That's the one. I know you weren't too keen on the idea that I'd be working with attorneys, but I'm excited about it. We'll be shooting 4 different commercials, and there's a lot of other media, too.
Congratulations, she said. When does all this start?
As soon as he signs. I have a guy who will start the website and internet stuff right away. But before we can film, there's a lot of preliminary work. We probably won't do any filming until the end of August.
That's perfect, she said.
Why is it perfect?
Because London will be in school then.
And?
And I called the daycares again today, and I don't think it's going to work out.
My top 2 choices, she said, mentioning their names, won't have any openings until school starts. And the third option, which might be able to start her earlier, won't know for sure until next week. And after that, the intake process requires at least a couple of weeks before she can actually attend. By then, we're coming up on the middle of August, but it also means she'd only be there for a week or so before school starts.
Why on earth would it take so long? Because all these places do interviews along with credit and background checks, which is exactly the kind of security I'd need to feel comfortable.
Do you want me to call, see if there's anything they can do to speed up the process?
You can, she shrugged.
I don't think there's much they can do about waiting lists, though. Maybe we should look into a nanny.
That would still take at least a couple of weeks, and they're also expensive. And what would we do when school starts? Fire her?
I wasn't sure. What I did know was that if she had started looking for daycare when she first landed the job, the story might have been different. I guess you're saying that I'm going to have to keep watching London, huh?
I certainly can't. And besides, you've done it so far. It didn't stop you from landing your first client.
There's a lot of prep work I'm going to have to do.
I don't know what else we can do, especially with what's going on with work.
You mean travel?
Not entirely. And that reminds me, I have to go to Atlanta on Thursday and won't be back until Friday evening.
There goes date night. She rolled her eyes.
I told you I'd be traveling this week, so don't make it a bigger deal than it is. But since it's obviously important to you, I'm hoping to be home at a reasonable hour so we can still have date night, okay?
Deal, I said.
Man, she said with a shake of her head. Anyway, what I was trying to say was that something else is brewing at work, something big. Aside from the executives, no one else at the company knows, so don't say anything.
Who would I tell?
I don't know, small talk with your clients, Marge, your parents,
she sighed.
Anyway, the reason I'm going to Atlanta is because Walter is planning to move our corporate headquarters to his offices there. He wants me to oversee the process.
You're kidding.
He's been talking to me about it since I started, but he finally made up his mind. He's going to let the rest of the employees know next week.
Why is he moving the office?
He says that the coastal building restrictions in North Carolina have gotten ridiculous, so he's decided to focus on developments in Georgia and Florida. Which makes sense if you think about it. And he's also been thinking about running for office one day, and he'd rather do that in Georgia. That's where his family is from, and his dad used to be a representative there.
I could care less about Walter and his plans, I thought. What does that mean for your job?
I'll be okay. He already told me not to worry.
So you'll work in the Charlotte office?
I don't know, she said. Walter and I brainstormed a bit, but like I said, he didn't make any decisions.
You're not thinking that we might have to move?
I hope not.
I hope not? I didn't like the sound of that. I don't want to move, I responded.
I know. We're thinking that I'll be able to split time between here and there.
Split time? What does that mean?
I don't know, Russ, she said,
exasperation creeping into her tone.
Until the move, I'm guessing that Walter and I will have to be in Atlanta 2 or 3 days a week. After that, who knows?
Just you and Walter?
Why would the other executives have to go?
I wasn't sure I liked her answer. No, scratch that. I definitely didn't like her answer. And there will be other travel as well?
Probably.
I'd hardly ever see you. London wouldn't see you.
That's not true, and you know it, she flared. It's not like I'm getting deployed overseas for 6 months at a stretch. Lots of couples have to deal with commuting between cities. Besides, Walter's the boss, not me. What am I supposed to do?
You could always quit, I offered, and maybe get something part-time?
I don't want to quit. I really like what I do, and Walter's a great boss. Not to mention the fact that we can't afford to give up my salary, can we? Since you only have one client?
The way she underscored that it was my fault that we'd been thrust into this predicament in the first place upset me. And maybe it was my fault, a thought that only increased my agitation. When is all this supposed to be happening?
Sometime in September. That's why we're going to Atlanta this week, to make sure the office will be ready in time.
September was 6 weeks away. I don't see how it's possible to move everyone that quickly.
It's really just the executives who will have to move. There will be layoffs in Charlotte, but it's not like everyone is getting fired. We'll still have a lot of developments in North Carolina in various stages of construction. As for Atlanta, it's mainly about hiring more people.
From what I've heard, the offices already have more than enough room. I don't know what to say.
There's not much to say until I know more.
I don't understand why you didn't mention all this until now.
I didn't mention it because nothing was certain until today.
Had someone told me in advance that on a day that I landed my first client, Vivian would have work-related news with even greater potential impact on our lives, I would have said they were crazy. Which shows how much I know. All right, I said. Keep me informed.
I always do, she said. On another note, London told me she had a play date with Bodhi today.
While I was doing my presentation, I said, she had a good time. She talked about Noodle the Poodle all afternoon.
Bodhi's the son of your ex-girlfriend, right? Emily?
Yeah, that's her.
I've heard some people in art class talking about her. They said she was pretty bitter about her divorce.
Divorce can be hard, I said, remaining noncommittal.
London also said that you had lunch with her last week.
I took London to Chick-fil-A, but yes, Emily was there too.
You probably shouldn't have lunch with her again, or go to her house, even for a play date. That's how rumors get started.
What kind of rumors?
You know exactly what rumors I'm talking about. She's divorced and you're married, and on top of that, she's an ex-girlfriend? It doesn't take Einstein to figure out what people would start saying.
Yes, I thought. I knew exactly. And as I sat beside my wife, I wondered how such a great day could end with me feeling as bad as I did.
Emily, huh? Marge asked over lunch a few days later. We were at my house. Vivian had gone to Atlanta earlier that morning, and I'd picked up the signed contract from Taglieri, and my first check as a business owner, right after London's piano lesson. I'd also locked up the phone number, which was critical. Marge, however, had no interest in talking about those things.
How is sweet Emily doing?
On the back porch, London was making a mess with the finger paints Marge had brought with her. Don't make this into something that it isn't. London had a play date.
That the two of you set up on an earlier date at Chick-fil-A.
It wasn't a date.
Maybe you should be standing in front of the mirror when you say that. But you didn't answer my question.
I already told you, she's still getting used to being divorced, but other than that, she's doing well.
I always liked her.
I know, you've said that before.
And I can't believe you told Vivian about it.
I didn't, London did.
So you weren't going to tell her?
Of course, I don't have anything to hide.
Too bad. Everyone needs some excitement now and then.
At my expression, she burst out laughing, which led to a coughing fit. I watched as she pulled out an inhaler and took a puff. What's that?
My doctor thinks I have asthma, so he prescribed this. I have to puff this stupid thing twice a day now. She slipped the inhaler back into her pocket. Did he prescribe horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector, too? Ha ha. Asthma can be pretty serious, you know. I was kidding, I said. If you remember, I had it as a kid. Allergy-induced. Whenever I was anywhere near a cat, my chest would lock up like a vice.
I remember, but you're changing the subject. What I was saying is that I know how much you love Vivian, and I'm sure that you've already learned your lesson when it comes to the pitfalls of cheating.
Who was that with again?
Oh, that's right, Emily, which is of course the subject at hand.
Do you sit back and consciously plan these conversations so you can maximize your enjoyment at my expense?
It just comes naturally, she said. You're welcome.
I laughed. Before I forget, don't say anything to Vivian about the fact you know about the headquarters moving to Atlanta. I wasn't supposed to tell anyone.
I'm your sister, I don't count.
She specifically mentioned you.
I can believe that. But okay, since we're in the trading secrets mode, it's my turn. Liz and I are thinking about having a baby.
I broke into a grin. Really?
We've been together long enough, it's time.
Are you thinking of adopting, or...
We're hoping that one of us will be able to get pregnant. I know I'm getting up there in years, so I'm thinking it'll be Liz, but who knows? Of course, she's only 2 years younger than I am. Anyway, we have an appointment with a specialist, and I guess we're both going to get checked out from top to bottom to see if it's even a possibility. If not, then we'll think about adoption, or maybe even sign up to be foster parents.
Wow, I said. This is serious. When are you starting the process?
Not until November. There's a wait list for this particular specialist. Supposedly, he's one of the best in the country, and it seems like everyone our age, or having problems, wants to see him.
Noting my goofy grin, she asked,
What?
I was just thinking that you'll be a great mom. Liz, too.
We're excited. When did all this happen? We've been talking about it for a while.
And you never told me?
It's not as though we'd made any decisions about it. It was just something that came up every now and then. But that biological clock kept ticking, and lately it's been getting pretty loud for both of us. I woke up the other morning to chimes.
Have you told Mom and Dad?
Not yet. And don't you tell them either.
I would rather we find out whether it's even possible for either of us to get pregnant first, or whether we'll go the adoption route.
I keep envisioning the doctor telling me that my uterus is covered in cobwebs.
I laughed. I'm sure you'll be fine.
That's because I, unlike you, exercise. Of course, my cough isn't making it easier, but I force myself to go to the gym.
You're still coughing?
Too much. Supposedly, even after the cold is better, your lungs can take 6 weeks to heal.
I didn't know that.
Neither did I. But the point is, unlike you, I'm still dedicated to my health.
I don't have time to work out.
Of course you have time. You can go first thing in the morning. That's when all the moms do it.
I'm not a mom.
I hate to break it to you, but lately, you kind of are.
You always know exactly what to say to make me feel better.
I call him like I see him. And you and I both know a little exercise wouldn't hurt you. You're looking a little soft these days.
I'm in shape.
Of course you are. If round is a shape, I mean.
You're a real peach, you know that?
On Friday morning, I stood in front of the mirror, thinking that maybe Marge had a point about starting to exercise again. But not, unfortunately, today. I had things to do, and while I watched London and brought her to art class, I spent the rest of my time putting together a timeline for Taglieri's campaign, with the thought that daycare was most likely off the table. Much of it I could do from home, getting the permits, scouting locations, and getting appropriate releases meant time in and out of the car and lots of driving. As long as I spread it out over a period of days, I didn't think London would be too bothered by it at all. When I'd spoken to Vivian, I'd said as much to her. I could hear the relief in her voice, and for the first time in years, we spent more than half an hour on the phone simply talking. I'd missed that, and I had the sense that she'd missed it too, and even though she ended up arriving home a little later than she'd wanted, she laughed and smiled, even flirted with me. And in the bedroom, she was both sexy and passionate, something I'd been craving, something that left me certain that she still cared for me. In the morning, her good mood persisted. Before she left for yoga, she made breakfast for London and me, and asked if we were planning to visit my parents.
If you are, can you wait for me?
I'd like to come.
When I assured her we would, she kissed me goodbye and I felt the light flicker of her tongue against my lips. In the ensuing glow, and with my mind flashing back to the night before, I had no doubts as to the reasons I'd married her in the first place. While we waited for Vivian to return, London and I went to the park, where we followed a nature trail that led to the golf course. Years ago, an Eagle Scout fulfilling his service project had mounted small plaques near various trees listing both their common and scientific names. At each of them, I read the information to London and would point out the bark or the leaves, pretending I knew far more than I did. She would repeat the words, Quercus virginiana, or Eucalyptus viminalis. And even though I knew I'd forget pretty much everything by the time I returned to the car, while on the trail I felt a little smarter than usual. But London stayed smart. Back home I made sandwiches, and while we were eating on the back porch, she pointed to a massive tree in the backyard.
That's Acaria ovata, she exclaimed.
That one? I asked, not bothering to hide my amazement. She nodded.
Shagbark hickory.
How do you know?
Because you showed me, she said, gazing up at me. Remember?
Not even slightly, I thought. To me, it had reverted to being a tree. I think you're right.
I am right.
I trust you. She took a drink of milk.
When's Mommy getting home?
I checked my watch. Pretty soon.
And then we're going to Nana and Papa's?
That's the plan.
I want to bake today. Cupcakes again.
I'm sure Nana will love that.
Will Auntie Marge and Auntie Liz be there?
I hope so.
Okay, I better bring Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles. I'm sure they'll want to say hi.
I'm sure. She chewed her sandwich.
Hey, Daddy?
Yes?
I'm glad I get to stay with you.
What do you mean?
Mommy told me that I'm not going to daycare. She said you could work and take care of me at the same time.
She did? She nodded.
She told me this morning.
She's right, but you might have to be in the car with me while I get my stuff done.
Can I bring my Barbies? Or Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles?
Of course, I said.
Okay, it'll still be fun then.
I smiled. I'm glad.
When you were little, did you go to daycare?
No, Auntie Marge watched me.
And Auntie Liz?
No, Auntie Liz wasn't around yet.
Oh,
she said. She took another couple of bites of her sandwich, her head turning from side to side as if taking in the world one sense at a time. I watched her, thinking about how beautiful she was, not caring whether I was biased at all.
Daddy, there's a giant bird in the tree,
she cried. When she pointed, I spotted the bird. It was chocolate brown with white head feathers glowing in the sunlight. As I stared, it spread its wings before tucking them back in. That's a bald eagle, I told her in amazement. In all the years I'd lived in Charlotte, I'd only seen one twice. I was struck by a sense of wonder, a recurring theme during our weeks together. Staring at my daughter, I suddenly understood how much had changed between London and me. Because I'd become comfortable in my role as the primary caregiver, London had become more comfortable with me. And all at once, the thought of being separated from her for hours on end once school began made my heart ache in a way I hadn't expected. That I loved London had never been in question. What I now understood was that I liked her, too, not only as my daughter, but as the young girl I'd only recently come to know. It might have been that thought, or maybe it had something to do with how the week had gone, but whatever the reason, I felt unusually tranquil, almost entirely at peace. I'd been down and now I was heading back up, and though I acknowledged that the feeling might be a fleeting one, I was old enough to know that much. It was as real as the sun. Watching London's rapt expression as she stared at the eagle, I wondered if she would remember this experience, or if she knew how I felt about our newfound closeness. But it didn't really matter. It was enough to feel it myself, and by the time the eagle flew away, I held on to the image, knowing it would stay with me forever.
Chapter 12. Bad Weather on the Horizon. In February 2004, I'd been out of college for almost 2 years and had been seeing Emily almost as long. I went to visit my parents on the weekend. Already the habit of seeing them had been firmly established by then. Normally Emily would join me, but for reasons lost to time, she couldn't make it that weekend, and I was on my own. When I arrived, my dad was working on my mom's car, not the Mustang,
His head was under the hood, and I saw that he was adding a quart of oil. "Glad to see you're taking care of your better half's car," I said, half-joking, to which my dad nodded. "Have to. Gonna snow this week. Already have the winter survival kit in the back seat. I wouldn't want your mom to have to get it out of the trunk in case she gets stuck on the roads." "It's not going to snow," I said. The temperature was already spring-like. I was wearing a t-shirt and had actually debated wearing shorts to their house. He squinted at me from under the hood. "Have you been watching the weather?" "I heard something about it on the radio, but you know weather guys. They're wrong more often than they're right." "My knees say it's going to snow, too." "It's almost 70 degrees.
Suit yourself. I'm gonna need some help wrapping the pipes after I finish up here. You'll be around to pitch in like the old days?"
My dad, I should say, had always been that type of guy. If a hurricane was expected to hit the Carolina coast, my dad would spend days clearing debris from the yard, moving things to the garage, and closing up the shutters, despite the fact Charlotte was nearly 200 miles from the coast.
"You weren't around when Hugo hit in 1989, he would tell Marge and me. "Charlotte might as well have been Dorothy's farmhouse. Whole city practically blew away."
"Yeah, I'll be here," I said to him. "But you're wasting your time. It's not going to snow." I went inside and visited with my mom for a while. When my father came in and motioned toward me an hour later, I knew what he expected. I helped without complaint, but even when I watched him start to work on his own car, I didn't take his cautions to heart. And even if I had, I wouldn't have had the slightest idea what might be included in a winter survival kit. That's what I told myself later anyway, but the real reason I wasn't ready for what came next was that, at that age, I thought I was smarter than he was. As late as Tuesday afternoon, the temperature was still inching towards 60 degrees. On Wednesday, despite the clouds rolling in, the temperature nearly hit 50, and I'd forgotten completely about my dad's warning. On Thursday, however, the storm smashed into Charlotte with a fury. It began to snow, lightly at first and then more heavily. By the time I was driving to work, the snow was accumulating on the highways. Schools were closed for the day, and only half the people made it to the agency. The snow continued to fall, and when I left work in mid-afternoon, the roads were nearly impassable. Hundreds of motorists ended up skidding off the highway, myself included, amidst a snowfall of more than a foot in a city with only a few snowplows available. By nightfall, the city of Charlotte had come to a standstill. It took nearly 5 hours for a tow truck to arrive and pull me out. Though I wasn't in danger, I brought a jacket, had half a tank of gas, and my heater was working. I kept thinking about the differences between my dad and me. While I blithely hoped for the best, my dad was the kind of guy who always expected and prepared for the worst. August brought with it sweltering temperatures and high humidity broken by the occasional afternoon thunderstorm, but the weeks leading up to London's first day of school felt entirely different than the previous weeks. If only because I was actually earning an income. Despite being scheduled every single minute of the day, I felt less stressed than I had since starting my business. I worked with the tech guy for everything tech-related, scouted locations and got the releases I needed, talked with the head of the film and sound crews, picked up the permits, talked to an agent at the local casting agency, signed a contract for the billboards and locked in a great deal for television advertising. All that in addition to finalizing the rehearsal and shooting schedule for the first two commercials and overseeing the casting session for the third commercial, all which would take place the same week London began at school. Despite those things, I still got London to and from her activities, went bike riding, received a million hugs and kisses, and even got her piano and art classes rescheduled once school began. Tennis camp came to an end right around the time we attended an open house at the school, where London had a chance to meet her new teacher. There she learned that Bodie would also be in her class, and I was able to visit with Emily for a minute. Since her ex had been in town, her schedule had been unpredictable, and I hadn't seen her much since our playdate. I introduced her to Vivian. My wife's demeanor could best be described as distant, but with a warning, and understood that I better keep such visits with Emily to a minimum, or there were going to be problems. Vivian spent 2 or 3 nights a week in Atlanta, and when at home, she continued to blow warm and cool. That was better than the hot and cold I'd been experiencing, but the excitement of the date night toward the end of July wasn't repeated, and the endlessly shifting temperature of my wife's moods left me both excited and nervous about seeing her whenever the SUV pulled up in the drive.
If there were any other changes to my routine during that period, it had to do with exercise. The day after I'd really looked at myself in the mirror, I took Marge's advice, and on the first Monday of the month, I set the alarm 40 minutes earlier. I donned a pair of running shorts and commenced a slow trudge through the neighborhood, one in which I was passed by every jogging mother, two of whom were also pushing strollers. Years ago, I'd been able to jog 5 or 6 miles and feel refreshed when I finished. After a mile and a half on day one of my new regime, I practically collapsed on the front porch rocker. It took me more than an hour to feel like myself again. Nonetheless, I did it the following morning, and the morning after that, a streak that hasn't been broken. By the second week of August, I added push-ups and sit-ups to my routine, and my pants became steadily looser as the month wore on. London had improved enough on her bike to allow me to ride beside her, and on the day after the open house at school, we traversed the neighborhood together, even racing for an entire block. I let her win, of course. After stowing our bikes back in the garage, I gave her a high five, and we ended up drinking lemonade on the back porch, hoping to see another bald eagle while the sun began its descent. But even though we didn't, I suspected I'd long remember that day, too, if only because it, too, was perfect in its own way. "Don't you think she already has enough clothes for school?" I asked Vivian. It was a Saturday before school was supposed to start, and because Vivian had arrived home late from Atlanta the night before, we'd agreed to put off date night until tonight. "I'm not getting clothes," Vivian said as she finished dressing in the bathroom. She'd already been to yoga and the gym and had showered. It was one of those mornings of frantic activity for her. "I'm getting school supplies. Backpack, pencils, erasers, and some other things. Did you even check the school website?" I hadn't. In all frankness, the thought hadn't even crossed my mind. I had, however, received and paid the bill for the first semester tuition, which put another dent in the savings. "I thought we were going to Mom and Dad's."
"We are," Vivian answered. "This isn't going to take that long. Why don't you head over and we'll meet you there?"
"Sounds good," I said. "Are you in Atlanta again this week?" It was a question I'd begun to ask regularly.
"I leave Wednesday and there's a dinner on Friday night that I can't miss, but I'm flying back afterward. I really hate that I'm missing most of London's first week at school."
"There's no way you can get out of it?"
"No," she said. "I wish I could, but I can't. Do you think she'll be mad at me?"
"If you were missing her first day, it might be different, but she'll be okay." I wasn't completely certain about that, but I knew it was what Vivian wanted to hear.
"I hope you're right."
"Speaking of school," I went on, "the tuition bill arrived, and I've been meaning to ask you about your paychecks."
"What about my paychecks?"
"Have you received any yet?" She slung her purse over her shoulder.
"Of course I've received my paychecks. I don't work for free."
"I haven't seen any deposits into our checking or savings account."
"I opened another account," she said.
I wasn't sure I'd heard her right. "Another account? Why?"
"It just seems simpler, so we could keep track of our budget and your business expenses."
"And you didn't tell me?"
"Don't make this into a bigger deal than it is."
"But it is a big deal," I thought, still trying to make sense of it. "Our savings account is getting a little low," I said.
"I'll take care of it, okay?" She leaned in and offered a quick kiss. "But let me get going with London so we can get to your parents at a decent time, okay?"
"Yeah," I said, wondering if my wife had wanted to make my head spin. "Okay."
That definitely falls into the "that's very interesting" category, Marge opined.
I just don't know why she didn't even mention it.
"Hello, that's pretty easy. It was because she didn't want you to know."
"How was I not going to know? I'm the one who writes the checks."
"Oh, she knew you'd find out, eventually, and that when you did, you'd sit back trying to figure it out."
"Why would she want to do that?"
"Because that's what she does. She likes to keep you guessing. She's always been that way."
"No, she hasn't," I said.
"Liz?" Marge asked.
"I'd rather not get involved," Liz said, holding up a hand. "I'm off the clock. Now, if you'd like to know a wonderful Italian marinara recipe, or if you have some insights into the safaris, count me in."
"I appreciate that, Liz. I've heard Botswana has some fabulous safaris."
"I would love to go one day. That's my dream trip."
"Can we get back on topic, please?" Marge said. "We have something very interesting going on."
"Rhinos are interesting," I said. "Elephants, too." Liz put a hand on Marge's knee.
"We really should try to schedule a safari in the next couple of years. Don't you think that would be fabulous?
I don't like when you take his side when he tries to change the subject.
He didn't just try. I think he did a pretty good job.
I saw an advertisement for a place called Camp Mambo.
It looked amazing.
I think you should definitely try to find a way to go, I said. It's one of those once-in-a-lifetime things.
Would both of you please return to the subject at hand?
Liz giggled at Marge's obvious frustration.
Every couple has their own style of communication, and they often speak in shorthand. Unless I know the subtext, I wouldn't know what to think about it.
See, Marge offered. She agrees with me that it's fishy.
No, she didn't. She didn't say anything.
That's just because you couldn't read her subtext.
Seriously, I said to Liz later, why do you think Vivian didn't tell me that she'd open another bank account? I know you're off the clock, but I'd really like to understand what's going on.
I'm not sure I can tell you what's going on. My guess would be as good as yours.
But if you had to guess. She seemed to think about what to say.
Then I'd say that it was just like she said and that it was no big deal. Maybe she simply wants her own account so she can see exactly how much she's contributing and it makes her feel better about herself.
I thought about that. Have you had clients who've done things like this? Other wives?
Liz nodded.
A few times.
And?
Like I said, it can mean different things.
I know you're trying to be diplomatic here, but I'm at a loss. Is there anything you can tell me?
Liz took her time before answering.
If there's one common thread that underlies situations like these, it's generally anger.
You think Vivian's angry with me?
I don't spend a lot of time with Vivian, and when I do, it's usually when we're here with the whole family. There's only so much one can learn in a setting like this. But when people are angry, they often behave in ways that are dictated by that emotion. They can do things they ordinarily wouldn't do.
Like open a secret bank account?
It's not secret, Russ. She told you about it.
So she's not angry?
I think, she said, that you'd be in a better position to answer that than I am.
Another hour passed, and there was still no sign of Vivian or London. Marge and Liz had gone for a walk around the block while Dad had settled in front of the television to watch a ball game. I found my mom in the kitchen dicing potatoes as a large pot of stew simmered on the stovetop, the aroma already tantalizing. She wore a bright orange apron that I vaguely remembered buying for her.
"There you are," she said. "I was wondering when you'd finally get around to visiting with your old mom."
"Sorry," I said, leaning in to give her a hug. I didn't mean to offend.
"Oh, hush. I was kidding. How are you? You look like you've lost weight."
I liked that she'd noticed. Maybe a little.
"Are you eating enough?"
"I've started jogging again."
"Yuck," she said. "I don't understand how anyone can like jogging."
"What are you making? It smells great in here."
"It's a French country stew. Joanne gave me the recipe and I thought I'd give it a try."
"Liz probably has a great recipe."
"I'm sure she does, but Joanne beat her to the punch."
"Do I know Joanne?"
"From the Red Hat Society. You probably saw her when you picked up London at lunch that day."
"Was she the one wearing the red hat? And the purple blouse?"
"Ha ha.
How are those fine red-headed ladies doing?"
"They're wonderful, and we have so much fun together. Last week after lunch, a few of us went to a lecture at the college given by an astronomer. Did you know that they've recently discovered an Earth-sized planet that orbits another sun? And that the planet is the same distance from the sun as Earth? Which means there could actually be life on that planet."
"I didn't know that."
"We talked about it at our next meeting."
"Because you want to be the first group to welcome the aliens with red hats if they ever visit?"
"Why are you teasing me? It's not nice."
I chuckled. "I'm sorry, Mom. I couldn't resist." She shook her head.
"I don't know where you got the idea that teasing mothers is a good thing. You certainly didn't learn it from me."
"That's true," I said. I motioned to the onion sitting beside the chopping block. "Do you need me to help with that?"
"You're volunteering in the kitchen?"
"I've been doing quite a bit of cooking lately."
"SpaghettiOs from a can?"
"Now who's teasing who?" Her eyes sparkled.
"Just trying to keep up with my children. But no, I don't need any help. Thank you, though. Is your father watching the game, or is he still in the garage?"
In the family room, I saw the flicker of the television screen. "The game," I answered.
"I had a dream about him a couple of days ago. Or at least I think it was about him. It was one of those dreams where everything was foggy, so I couldn't see very well, but he was in the hospital with the cancer."
"Hmm."
"Anyway, there were all these beeping machines around him, and Judge Judy was on the television. The doctor was from India, I think, and there was a giant stuffed animal on the bed beside your dad. A big purple pig.
Hmm, I said again.
What do you think it means? The purple pig, I mean.
I really couldn't tell you.
Did you know my grandmother was psychic? She used to have premonitions, too.
I thought you said it was a dream.
The point is that I'm worried about him.
I know you are, but the doctor said he was fine. He hasn't been short of breath again, has he?
Not that I've noticed. And if he has, I'm sure he wouldn't tell me.
I'll ask him, okay?
Thank you, she said. Where are Vivian and London?
They're grabbing some last-minute school supplies. They should be here pretty soon. London's first day is Tuesday, by the way. I don't know if you'd like to come, but you're welcome to.
Your dad and I will both be there, she said. It's a big day for her.
It is, I admitted. My mom smiled.
I can remember your first day of school. You were so excited, but after I walked you to the classroom, I remember going back to my car and crying.
Why were you crying?
Because it meant you were growing up, and you were so different than Marge. You were always so much more sensitive than she was. I worried about you.
I wasn't sure I was happy as being described as more sensitive than my sister, but I suspected my mom probably wasn't entirely wrong about this. It turned out okay. You know I always liked school. I just hope London will, too. We went to the open house and she met her teacher. That seemed to go okay.
She'll be fine. She's smart and mature and really sweet. Of course I'm biased.
That's a good thing.
I'm just glad that you're not angry with me.
Why would I be angry with you?
Because I wasn't able to watch London whenever you needed it.
You were right, I said. It wasn't your responsibility. But let's just say I developed a whole new level of respect for single mothers.
It's been good for London, too. She's changed a lot this summer.
You think so?
Of course she has. You're just too close to see it.
How has she changed? The way she talks about you, for starters. And how much she talks about you. She talks about me?
Lately she talks about you all the time. It's me and Daddy went bike riding, or Daddy played Barbies with me, or Daddy took me to the park. She never used to do that.
That's pretty much been my life these days.
It's been good for you, too. I've always thought that your dad could have benefited from knowing how the other half lives.
But then he wouldn't be the big, gruff guy that Marge and I came to fear.
Hush, she says. You know he loves you both.
I know, I said. As long as I don't talk to him too much while the ball game's on. Of course, Marge and London can talk the whole time, and there's no problem.
That's because Marge knows the game better than you do, and London will get up from his lap and bring him a beer. Why don't you try that?
I'm too big to sit in his lap.
You're such a comedian today. There are a couple of beers in the fridge. Why don't you grab two and see what happens? He likes visiting with you.
I know exactly what's going to happen.
Oh, don't let him scare you. Just remember, he can sense your fear.
I laughed as I walked to the fridge, certain that I had the best mom in the world. How are you, Dad? I held an open bottle of beer toward him. For you, I said. Fortunately, I'd timed it perfectly with a commercial, which he'd already muted. What are you doing? I brought you a beer. Why? Why, because I thought you might want one? You're not going to ask if you can borrow some money, are you? No. Good. Because the answer is no. It's not my fault you quit your job. My father, the king of blunt. I took a seat on the couch beside him. How's the game going? Braves are losing. I brought my hands together, wondering what to say next. How are things, Dad? Plumbing business going okay? Why wouldn't it be? I don't know, I thought. Because you make me nervous sometimes? I took a drink of my beer. I told you I landed my first client, right? Yep, the attorney. Italian guy. I'll be filming a couple of commercials next week. I also have to meet with some child actors so I can film a third commercial, too. I don't like lawyer commercials. You don't like any commercials, Dad, I said. That's why you mute them. He nodded in agreement while the silence grew between us, the only sound my mother's humming from the kitchen. He scratched at a corner of the label from the bottle, figuring it was probably polite to ask a question. How's Vivian? She's doing well, I said. Good, he said. At that point, the game came back on, and my dad reached for the remote control. The mute went off, and a peek at the box score showed that the Braves were down by 3 runs with 4 innings left to go.
We should head to a Braves game one day. You and I.
He scowled at me.
Are you going to keep talking all day, or will you let me enjoy the game in peace?
I think you've scared him, Dad, Marge said, collapsing on the couch beside my dad. She and Liz had returned from their walk.
What are you talking about?
Marge pointed toward me.
He's perched over there like he's afraid to move a muscle.
My dad shrugged.
He was talking and talking like one of them wind-up dolls.
He'll do that, Marge agreed. She nodded toward the set. What's the score?
4-4 now, bottom of the eighth. Braves are coming back.
Have they brought in their relief pitcher?
In the seventh inning.
Who is it?
My dad mentioned a name I didn't recognize.
That's a good choice, Marge noted. I really like his slider, but his changeup is good, too. How's he doing so far?
A lot of pitches. He's having to work it.
Do you remember the days when we had Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin?
Who doesn't? That was one of the best rotations ever. But this year...
Yeah, I know. Down year. But at least they're not the Cubs.
Can you imagine? Over 100 years since they've won it all. Makes the curse of the Bambino seem ridiculous, especially considering the last few years.
Who do you think will win it all?
I don't care, as long as it's not the Yankees.
I'm thinking the Mets might pull it off.
As good a guess as any, he agreed. They're playing good ball. Royals, too. And they've got some serious offenses here.
As he answered, Marge sent a lazy wink in my direction. Eventually, Marge and I joined Liz on the back porch. From the living room, sounds of the game drifted outside. I was never a baseball fan, I said to my sister. I ran track in high school.
And now you're jogging with the mamas. Don't ever let anyone tell you that you let your raw athleticism go to seed.
I turned toward Liz.
Does she talk to you like this?
No, Liz answered.
If she does, she knows I won't feed her. Besides, you're an easy target.
I was just trying to say that I don't think Dad would have wanted to talk to me, even if I did know as much about baseball as you do.
Don't feel bad about it, Marge shrugged. You might not know baseball, but I'm sure Dad can't name every Barbie accessory either, so you've got that going for you.
That makes me feel so much better.
Oh, don't be so thin-skinned. Dad won't talk to me when he's in the garage. That's your place, not mine.
Really?
Why do you think I bothered learning anything about the Braves? He probably wouldn't talk to me at all unless he was asking me to pass the mashed potatoes while we were eating.
Do you think that he and Mom talk the way they used to?
After almost 50 years, I doubt it. There's probably not much left to talk about. But hey, it clearly works for them.
Daddy!
I heard from the kitchen, and I saw London was skipping in my direction. She was wearing a dress that could have been worn on the red carpet, and holding a soft lunchbox emblazoned with an image of Barbie. Another item to add to my vast knowledge of Barbie accessories, Marge was no doubt thinking.
Look what I got,
London said, raising it for me to see.
It fits into my Barbie backpack, too.
That's great, sweetheart. It's really pretty. She hugged the three of us while we all took turns admiring her lunchbox.
Are you excited about school? Marge asked.
London nodded.
I start Tuesday.
I know, Marge said. Your dad told me. He said that you met your teacher, too.
Her name is Mrs. Brinson,
London said.
She's really nice. She said that I might be able to bring Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles to show and tell.
That would be great, Marge said.
I'm sure the other kids will love them. Where are they now? Did you bring them? No, they're at home. Mommy said it was too hot to leave them in the car while we were shopping.
She's probably right. It's pretty hot today.
Are you hungry? I asked London.
Mommy and I had lunch not too long ago.
So that's where you were.
Did you see Nana in the kitchen?
She says we're going to make pudding in a cloud in a couple of minutes.
It's a snack, though, so it won't ruin my dinner.
And then we're going to plant some flowers.
That sounds fun. How about Papa?
I sat in his lap for a little while. His whiskers were itchy when he kissed me. He liked my lunchbox, too.
I'll bet he did. Did you watch the game with him?
Not really. We talked about Mr. and Mrs. Sprinkles, and he told me that he missed them. And then we talked about school and my bike, and he said he wanted to watch me ride it sometime. Then he told me that when he was little, he used to ride his bike all the time. Once he said he rode it all the way to Lake Norman and back.
That's a long way, I said, not doubting it for a minute. It sounded like something my dad would have done. Just then, Vivian emerged from the house. I stood and gave my wife a kiss. Marge and Liz offered hugs before taking their seats again. Vivian sat down, too.
Vivian straightened London's dress.
I think Nana's waiting for your help in the kitchen, sweetie.
Okay,
London said, scampering off and vanishing inside.